Hi, boys and girls. Welcome back. I hope you had a good weekend. I'm Henrik, and this is Red Ice Radio, an alternative, independent, and listener-supported radio program. And we discuss topics forbidden by the mainstream media and many of the most important issues that are ignored, omitted, and covered up by the lefty sources and globalist mentalities that run the mainstream culture these days. That's why we are in a culture war. If you want to find out more, redice.tv is the website. Our guest is Judgy Bitch, a.k.a. Janet. She's here to offer a contrarian view on several topics related to feminism and the SJW-run discourse that dominates popular culture, unfortunately, these days. As is the case with most guests, we might not always agree on everything and be on the same page. Sometimes it's just a matter of being paragraphs off, to be honest. But that's what makes it fun, right? You have to challenge and push further on new concepts to get to the core of the issues. So in the first hour, we are going to address the ills of feminism. No complaints there. And it's later in the second hour when we discuss the alt-right, Hillary's speech, and white genocide, the application and use of that term, that we have some different views on things. This show, by the way, is also available as video for members. You can subscribe at redicemembers.com to see it. All right, let's get to our guest. Welcome, Janet, or a.k.a. Judgy Bitch, I should say. Thank you so much for coming on the show with us. It's good to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a real pleasure.
Well, excellent. I very recently stumbled into some of your stuff. I've seen you before a little bit here and there. And, you know, we haven't done a good show on feminism in a while, so this will be a great opportunity to do that, you know, to connect back with some of those feminist topics. But you're into a lot of other stuff as well. I mean, a lot of topics we share. I saw the other day you did a video about white genocide, and I know that it wasn't maybe a favorable video in terms of the usage of the term and whatever else. I'd be interested in hearing a bit more about that later on. But, you know, we also talk a lot about the attack on Western values and the problems with immigration and all these kinds of things. So I think we have a lot to discuss and talk about here today. But just tell us first, kind of cover the basis, I guess. When did you turn into, and I don't know what the right English is there, is it a judgy bitch or just judgy bitch?
I like to think of myself as the judgy bitch.
The judgy bitch. There you go. Thank you. Okay, got it.
Yeah, well, I actually ended up taking a women's studies degree by stealth. I didn't know I was taking a women's studies degree. I took film theory because I got to university and everyone said, follow your passions, do what you love and everything will work out. And I thought, well, I kind of like watching movies. So I took a degree in watching movies. For real, you want to talk about the classic idiot liberal arts degree. I have a film in watching movies.
Really?
I majored in Keanu Reeves. I have a minor in Johnny Depp. Can I just say how fucking brilliant Johnny Depp is today? You know, he had that big fight with his wife, Amber Heard, and there was all this he said, she said, and then she was like, well, I'm taking the moral high road and I'm donating my entire divorce settlement to charity. Like, oh, sure you are. Johnny Depp paid her settlement directly to the charities she identified.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
That's hilarious. It's fantastic. I can't wait for this little gold digging whore to start screaming about how that's unfair. Sure it is. Sure it is. Okay.
So you just, you started studying film and is that the point where you realize how useless it was, or tell us more?
Not even then. I mean, I did what I had to do. I was a good little student. I read my feminist theory. I went through, I watched the movies, I analyzed them. The whole thing never really stuck with me. I grew up on a farm with three brothers. It's very difficult to convince me that I'm oppressed when it's snowing, it's cold, it's blowing out. The boys have to go with my dad out to the barn with axes to chip water troughs open, and I'm inside making coffee and I'm the oppressed one. Like, it's very difficult to convince women who live on farms or in any kind of hardship at all that they're the oppressed ones. It just doesn't fly. So I'm studying women's studies. I'm studying all these feminist theories. I'm watching movies. I'm going back to my home with my brothers. I realize I can't talk about any of this because it's complete bullshit and it doesn't align with any facet of my life. But honestly, the big change came after I graduated with my brilliant degree in watching movies. I realized I was qualified to work at Starbucks and not much else. And I was getting to that age where I'm like, okay, you know, family, marriage, boyfriend, I would like one. That would be nice. So I decided to go and take an MBA, Master's of Business Administration. And my plan on going there was to get my MRS. I was looking for a husband. I had no intention of working in a corporate job, nothing like that. You should hear feminists scream on my website when I admit that. They go ballistic. But I selected an MBA because I thought that was my best chance of finding a husband who shared my values, which I did. And even at that point, I still wasn't particularly critical of feminism, even though I understood this, it's garbage. These are just women who hate men. I still didn't really care. And I'm not saying that in a way that's proud. That is just simply how women are, that we don't care about something until it hits right home. And I'll tell you when it hit home is when I had my second child, who was a son. I started to think about what the world would look like for him growing up in it. And at the same time, my husband and I were debating whether or not we would like to have a third and maybe a fourth child. I was at home full time. And there was all these women. It was never men. Never once did a man ever say this to me. It would be women saying this to me, that how can you even think about having a third child when you don't have a job? How can you trust this man? How do you know he's not going to, you know, fall in love with this secretary, throw you and the kids out on the street to starve? Like, how can you sleep at night not thinking about this, that you are just one man between you and fucking disaster, that he will destroy you because this is what men are? This is crazy. How did we get to this point? How did we get into a culture that can look at someone who is, he's like the very definition of a breadwinning man, someone who takes great pride in caring for his family, who loves his family? How did we get to this point where people will openly say he is a monster who will allow his children to starve,
right,
and fuck his secretary? I thought, this is nuts. He's the last man in the world who would do this. What happened to our stories about men who do everything, who sacrifice everything to care for their families? Where did those stories go? So, of course, I started Googling it, right? Stereotypes about men, discrimination against men. Why do people think men are horrible monsters? And that led me almost immediately to A Voice for Men, which was one of the only, back in 2012, was the only websites out there that was really talking about this, discrimination against men and stereotypes, really negative stereotypes about men. So I came into, that's how I discovered the men's rights movement. I came into it as a married wife and mother, very concerned about what sort of world was out there for my son. You know, it wasn't until I had a little baby boy that I gave a shit, which is a terrible thing to say because there's so many men in my life that I love and care about, but I never cared enough to even Google it till I had a son. And I think that's a profound truth that we as a culture don't like to admit about women, that they simply don't care what happens to anyone else other than themselves, unless it involves their own children. And that's a hard thing to wrap your head around, because we don't like to little girls are sugar and spice and everything nice, right? We don't like to talk about all the awful things that are indigenous almost to femininity and that have to be controlled and that have to have a limit set on them and boundaries set on them. And I was perfectly fine with discussing that. I'm very open-minded. I have four brothers. The anger and the aggression and the passion that I met as I was exploring the men's rights movement did not scare me at all. I grew up with three brothers. I know this is how guys communicate. I didn't freak out at all. I was like, yeah, okay, let's just keep the conversation rolling and let's see what there is to learn here. And I have to tell you, I learned an absolute lot. And every single time I would ask the question, why? Why is it like this? Where does this come from? Why are men being taken out of their children's lives? Why don't we have equal parenting? Why are mothers considered better than fathers? Why is it okay for a 40-year-old woman to rape a 15-year-old boy, but a 40-year-old man who rapes a 15-year-old girl is going to jail for life? Where does this come from? And I had all the theory was right there in my head. It was right there. It wasn't hard for me to make that connection, to see that the main political force driving these horrible narratives about men and these ridiculous myths about how wonderful women are is feminism.
Right.
It wasn't hard for me to connect that at all. So I immediately said, okay, if we're going to help men, we need to take apart this poisonous ideology. It's got to come down.
Give us an outline of some of the things that you you would criticize the most of the feminist movement. I mean, I know there's these layers now. We're so deep into it. It's second and third and fourth and fifth wave. And I can't even keep track of it anymore, to be honest. And there seems to be enough confusion within the movement itself, that they're starting to bicker and fight with each other now. But what would you pull out of that and direct people's attention to from feminism?
Well, there's probably three big ones: the wage gap, rape culture, and families, the attack on families. So we look at the wage gap. There is no wage gap. The very fact that women can survive and maintain absolutely fantastic standards of living in our culture while not having to work the same hours as men isn't evidence of discrimination. It's evidence for privilege. We don't have to work the same number of hours as men because men take care of us. They do that either individually as our husbands, or they do that collectively as the majority of taxpayers. But women don't have to work 14 hours in a coal mine to survive because we have husbands who take care of us. We can work part-time. We can take low-paying, stupid jobs like being a secretary, where basically your qualification is that you know the days of the week in the alphabet. That's still the number one occupation for women in 2016, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
You know the alphabet and the days of the week. Woohoo, ladies, way to go.
Right.
Really impressive, really, really impressive. But the fact that we can work those jobs isn't oppression, it's privilege. Men can't do that by and large. They don't have the luxury of having two children and deciding, yeah, I'm just going to take like a dead-end low-wage job and work part-time at it and everything will be fine. Like,
right.
They can't do that because they're still expected to care for their families. So the wage gap particularly drives me crazy. The way feminists typically calculate the wage gap is they take the entire population of males of working age and they take all of the income and then they divide it between all those men and that's the average wage. Okay, they do the same thing for women. They take all women of working age, their average income, divide it up, and that's the average wage for women. Well, they're counting me. I haven't had a paid office job for the majority of my adult life. And let's just say for my entire fucking adult life, I have never had gainful employment. I have been a stay-at-home wife and mother, and feminists are using that extraordinary luxury. I recognize that it's a luxury. I have a husband who can pay our bills. We live in a way that makes that possible. For feminists to take that, to count me in their wage gap stats and call it oppression, that pisses me off. It's because it's so the opposite of oppression. It is not oppression for me to not have to work. I get to do whatever I want all day long. That isn't oppression. That's extraordinary luxury. So
yeah.
There's the wage gap. It's just a bunch of crap. It's crap. It's actually proof that women are privileged, not that they're oppressed. The second one is rape culture. My particular take on this one is that rape culture is missing a word. It's rape fantasy culture is what we're looking for. That it's no mystery to me that feminists who encourage women to be particularly unattractive, to be belligerent, to be unpleasant, to be of unfortunate body weights, to engage in unfortunate hairstyles and grooming, and then they encourage these women to walk down any street that they go and imagine that every man they meet, every man, is so overcome with lust for them that they're going to fuck up their entire lives. They're going to risk ruining their reputation, losing their families, going to jail. They're going to risk everything just because they want to fuck them. And all I can say is, you know, bitch, please, are you fucking kidding me? This idea, teach men not to rape, is the idea that all men are rapists. Well, that means that all women are particular rape victims. Let me tell you, there's a whole lot of women out there that are not in any danger of being raped, ever. And a lot of them are called feminists. So it's rape fantasy culture. They have actually stripped the sexual narrative of their lives. They've stripped it out of their lived experience, like things like grooming, like doing things that appeal to partners. And then they've replaced it with this insanity that they call rape culture, because it's the only way that they can imagine that men desire them. And it's sad, actually. It's one of the very saddest things that I think feminism has wrought for young women who should be at the height of their sexual pleasures and powers. They're actually, they've just been completely and utterly destroyed. That entire aspect of their being has been destroyed. And it's turned into a malignancy that's really, really unfortunate. And of course, it's always these older, hit-in-the-wall, middle-aged, almost menopausal women convincing these very young women who should be some pretty lethal competition, just convincing them to turn themselves into ugly shrews. And isn't that interesting? It sure eliminates the competition, doesn't it?
Right. Right. Oh boy. Well,
so yeah, rape culture's garbage. It's rape fantasy culture. It's an expression of women's sorrow at having surrendered their sexuality at the altar of feminism. And the third one is what was the third one that I brought up?
Wage gap feminism, and then what was the third one?
The family, the attack on the nuclear family.
Yes.
Yes. I think it's C.K. Chesterton who said that feminists were succeeded in convincing women that to stay at home and care for your own family on your own schedule and on your own time, to care for the people that you love, is slavery. But to go out and work for a man or a woman, to work for a corporation that will fire you in a heartbeat, that doesn't care if you live or die, to work for them, never see your family, pay someone else to care for them, that's freedom. That's the central attack on the nuclear family. And what feminism told women is that you won't, if you throw off the shackles of heterosexual nuclear marriage, you throw this off, you won't have to answer to men at all. You get to do whatever you want with no constraints on your behavior of any kind, and it's going to be awesome. But here's the reality. No one gets to live that life. Everyone has constraints on their behavior, and women simply thrown to their own devices are miserable. They ruin families. They destroy their children. They don't have the number of children they want. They are deeply unhappy with their lives and their experiences. Women have never been unhappier. The truth that no one wants to talk about is that the patriarchy is one of the best, safest, happiest forms of existence for most women. When you look at women and measure their happiness, women who have more than four children, they have the highest rates of career satisfaction. I hate calling motherhood a career because it's not. It's an occupation for sure. It occupies my time. It's not a job and it's not a career. It's an occupation and it's a destiny, and it's one that most women desperately want. And the happiest women are women who have more than four children, who are married to the father of those children, who are in stable, functioning marriages. They are the happiest. They are also the physically safest. Being in a heterosexual marriage with the father of your children is the best predictor of whether or not a woman is going to experience violence of any kind in her life. You are the safest and happiest, ladies, under the care of a man you love. And we don't want to talk about that. Feminism told them the opposite. No, that's the worst thing you could possibly do. That's the worst thing you could have. And it's not. It's the best. And women are starting to figure that out now.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about the survival also, the role of survival of the human species. That's, you know, bestowed upon women. I mean, yes, it takes two to tango, but I mean, it's women's, that it's in the hand of them, right? And to denigrate this beautiful task of one of the most important things we have, that's beyond wicked, you know, in my mind. But what do you think lies at the root of this? Is it trust issues? Because obviously someone has managed to nestle their way into women's heads, right, with all this feminism, that they begin to mistrust the mates that they choose, or men in general. But where is the, let's say, that the responsibility on women for themselves, who pick these mates then, or pick these men, that might treat them badly, etc.? Where is there any level of self-responsibility here in this picture?
Well, I think that's when you set, we're going to have to bring in abortion and reproduction here. And personally, my view on abortion is that I use the same standard for the beginning of life that I use for the end, that at the end of life, if you do not have any brain activity, you are not perceiving the world. There's no sentience. The I that you are is gone. I believe that body is gone. I use the exact same standard for the beginning of life, that as soon as you have brain activity, which is probably around 12 weeks, at pregnancy, that is a person. That is a person who is alive, and you are not entitled to abort that child under any circumstances. I don't care what they are. What feminism did was bring in abortion. So women's need to rely on men, and it allowed women to escape all of their obligations, even up to the point of murdering living human beings. It's not a fetus. It's not a clump of cells. At some point, you have a human being there. And women are allowed to murder human beings to avoid obligations and avoid responsibility. For most of human history, that simply wasn't true. Men could not escape the obligation of combat. You couldn't. You were obliged to defend, at the very least, your home, your village, your tribe, your nation. you had you couldn't escape that obligation, and women could not escape the obligation of giving birth. Once you have chosen a man and you have sex, you are going to have a baby, and you're going to need someone to help you with that with raising that child. You can't do it alone. There isn't any large government system. So once we brought abortion and birth control into the mix, all of a sudden, the constraints on women were gone. They evaporated, and feminism occurred at the exact same moment. When you look at sort of solid Catholic families, you know, Catholic families having 25 children, that's not a sustainable model for families. So the Catholic Church, I think, and I'm not Catholic, I'm just looking at observing the culture, the Catholic Church has been very good at maintaining both men and women's obligations by trying to find a way of modernizing and reforming the mutual obligations model that men and women depend on one another, and that they are bonded to one another for life, while at the same time allowing family control. But feminism got in there and just stripped every obligation towards society that women had, and treated this like it was a fantastic thing. And it probably does seem like your first reaction, if someone said to you, we are going to remove every obligation you have to anyone ever, your first reaction, whether you're a man or woman, is probably, woohoo, yeah, that's awesome. But the reality is that that's not awesome. That's anarchy. That is complete and utter destruction. And feminism jumped on that because they are interested in destruction. That is their final goal. They do want to see the complete and utter eradication of patriarchy, male power, whatever you call it. It's just a drive to power.
Is that why they side with this unholy alliance with Islam, if you will, that it's, you know, open borders advocates, many of them are feminists, they're, you know, in this kind of environment of the social justice warrior? Because I never understood it, to be honest, and we continue to point out the double standards, but there doesn't seem to be the connecting the dots here, some of these women.
Well, I think there's two reasons they do it. One is that they are absolutely enamored of this powerful role, male role, that this is rape fantasy come to life for them. I mean, you import all these crazy Muslim men into your culture and you suddenly literally are surrounded by people willing to risk everything to fuck you. I mean, that sounds good in theory, right? It's a romance novel come to life for lots of these women. You see women holding up signs saying, I spread my legs for refugees or whatever. They are not good looking young 18-year-old women doing this. This is middle-aged 40-year-old women thinking, and it's just disgusting. It's so gross. It makes me sick. This is rape fantasy culture. They really like the idea of being brutalized by men. There's a reason that every religion the world has known has always featured a patriarch, that the longing for a father, the longing for strong male authority is deeply ingrained in humanity. You can't get rid of it. All you can do is transfer it. And right now, feminists are transferring it onto these animals from the Middle East. They are stuck in the 7th century. They shouldn't be there. And then on the other hand, women have never had any obligation to defend their nation. They don't have any obligation towards combat. They don't have any sense that if this fucking goes bad, someone's going to have to fix it. And it's not going to be women.
Right.
It comes right back to this idea of not having any obligations. They have no obligations to the state. They can't be drafted. They have no obligations to men. They can't be held they can't be held into marriages. They can dissolve marriages for any fucking reason they want. I mean, women literally have no obligations to anyone. And so they're bringing in people who will enforce those obligations in horrific ways.
How do we explain that? I mean, was it the reason that men started to back down when they started to get criticized? Because I'm figuring, you know, if they have this patriarchy imposed on them, all these women, right? Why didn't they then kind of accept that and submit to that? And so instead of transferring that to, let's say, Islam or another kind of patriarchy that's moving in, how does that work? How does that mechanics play out?
Well, the smart ones did accept it, and we are subsequently living very happy lives. you can go and survey married women to this day, even if they're 20 years old or 30 years old or getting close to 40 years old. Married women with children are still the happiest groups in our society, and consequently so are the men. So many of us are still we still understand where our happiness lies. And I think a lot of women threw it off because it superficially sounds so good. Women are easily persuadable. That's one of the aspects of our psychology that, ironically, feminists have been really good at documenting. There are two feminist theories. One is called, her name is Susan J. Heckman. Another one is Carol Gilligan. And they've both done fantastic jobs of explaining why it is that female psychology is so profoundly different from male psychology, and that our psychologies are evolved precisely to be persuadable. They are evolved to have very situational, very pliable, what's a good word for this? Situationally specific morality, that we don't develop universal senses of morality, because that isn't the best kind of morality to have in the domestic sphere. And I always love progressives and leftists who will stand up and absolutely mock creationists, people who reject evolution. And you say evolution doesn't exist and it's not a thing and there's no rabbits in the Paleolithic and how come there's still apes and stupid stuff like that. And I will join them in mocking people who don't believe in evolution. But those exact same progressives and lefties, when you present them with evolutionary psychology, will all of a sudden say, oh, absolutely not. That's not even a thing. That's just patriarchy. It's just sexism. Every aspect of human beings evolved except their brains, except their psychology, because they don't want to admit what the inevitable conclusions of evolutionary psychology show us, that women are specifically adapted for domestic spaces to take care of the old, the elderly, the sick, to have small children. That's what we are intended to do. That's what we're good at. All women, you know, statistically, yes, all women. What do you have, like 5 leaders in the fucking Bible out of the millions of people in the Middle East? This isn't because they're oppressed. It's because women aren't interested. That isn't what they want to do, which is why feminism have now switches to outcome, right? Instead of opportunity feminism, women, we're going to give you the opportunity to do anything. And women were like, okay, we're going to be teachers, we're going to take care of old people, sick people, young people, we're going to take care of dogs and kitties and babies,
refugees and immigrants, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So it's like a
that
kind of a
women do.
It's like a surrogate thing, right? That the in the absence of children, in the absence of a family, you seek to maybe extend that barrier, and you're seeking other basically aspects that can kind of fill that void. Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely. And I just had an experience this past weekend. My husband's friend came to visit with his 4 children. So I had 7 children in the house, and I wanted to give them lots of time to hang out. They were out swimming in the lake doing stuff. I mean, the 2 guys. So I was here with all 7 children, and believe with 7 children to take care of, you don't have time for anything else. That's it. Your life is just these 7 children. You don't have time to worry about other stuff. And all that's, it was a very happy feeling. I mean, it was pretty fantastic. I very much enjoyed it. I sort of regret that we only have 3 now. I would have been a great mom for 7. I think the vast majority of women would be great mothers for 7 children too. And most of them have none, and they're replacing it with dogs and kittens and refugees.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. It's insane. You know, one of the things I think that's problematic here is the issue of nature, right? That there isn't really an appreciation for the natural things, as you say, that they deny certain things that comes out of us from science and things like this. They even view the family as some kind of fascist unit, right? It's somehow an imposed structure. But I think they've just been outside of the realm of nature for too long. I don't know what happens really there, but it's like that they're isolated. They don't really understand that, you know, you don't get to choose in nature. You have to do certain things to survive. What's the reply to something like this? I mean, how do we bring them back into the natural world again to kind of imply that, you know what, if you want to survive, if you want your civilization to survive, you need to get back into the picture of realizing what nature is. Is that even a possibility, do you think?
There's 2 ways that you can do that. One is to just let the world go to hell, catastrophic war. Women will learn very, very fucking quickly that they are part of nature and they're not really high up on the food chain. That's obviously not ideal. A second way, which will be difficult in terms of marketing, but very simple in terms of implementation, is to simply remove women's ability to vote. Don't let them vote. Since women do not pay the blood consequences of their leadership choices, they really should not have any say in who those leaders are. Women in America are going to try very, very hard to elect Hillary Clinton, who is going to blow up the Middle East. and bodies and boots are going to have to go and deal with that. And you can't draft women. That's the simple reality. Even if you go to a Supreme Court, whatever, you have a court challenge. Norway says, oh, we're now having mandatory service for men and women. The U.S. Supreme Court says, yes, women will be drafted. The first politician who offers exemptions is going to be elected. And that's what women will do. They'll vote for exemption after exemption after exemption so that effectively no woman can be drafted. Mm-hmm. As long as women can vote, they will never pay the blood consequences of leadership choices. And if they're not going to pay the choices, the consequences, they should not have a say. Now, a lot of people say, oh, that it will be impossible to do. It's not impossible to do. Repeal the 19th Amendment in the US. It's very, very simple. Women no longer have the right to vote, period. I mean, it's really a paper stroke. And for women who are arguing that they're not part of nature, I would like to see something. We know from in vitro science, we know from science, it's very well established that the length of your fingers reflects your in utero testosterone exposure. I can give you a link to this article. It's very, very interesting. A group of researchers went to a radical feminist conference and they measured the digit length. So I've got a throwing knife here. I'm going to use as an edge. Typically, women have a longer, you can see that is quite a bit longer than my third finger there. Women typically have a much longer index finger than their pointer finger. That indicates a high level of estrogen in my bodies. Men will have the opposite. This finger is going to be quite a bit lower than their ring fingers. When they went to this feminist conference, what they found was that women typically had high levels of in utero testosterone exposure, that these women were hormonally much closer to men than they are. And they engage in literal penis envy, which is kind of funny. They are jealous of masculine traits because they are physiologically closer to men. So for women who are arguing, and a lot of feminists, you'll notice that a lot of media feminists have the very thick, strong jaws, which they'll say, oh, that's just sexism. You are just pointing out that, you know, women are ugly and that's just typical sexist response. Well, no, it's not actually. That heavy structured jawline is also very typical of high levels of testosterone. And these women aren't just ugly. They are more masculine than your average women. And that's where that feminist paradox that you just had up on the screen, that's where it comes from. The women selling this. Yeah, look at that.
I mean, Sally Cohn. Yeah, classic.
Yeah, classic. I mean, yeah. With a mustache, you wouldn't even know.
Well, it's true. I mean, this might be, you know, sound cruel or whatever, and we can discuss the reasons for this. Why is it that these hormonal imbalances occur in the womb of women? That's where, you know, this process is triggered. Then we have endless amounts of endocrine mimickers in our environment, which unfortunately continues that process, right? So this is real science behind this. And I've actually not heard that many people talk about it, unfortunately, because it shows that there is some things that we can do about this. Because why is it, you know, Janet, that, you know, they, how do I formulate this? They go in the opposite direction. If they notice that there are parameters or desires, I guess, within, let's say, a young boy to become like a woman, right? Then they go in this impossible direction of it, of turning, you know, giving estrogen, maybe implying surgery and all these kinds of things, instead of basically going back to the normal state, which is to offer, let's say, testosterone to make the boy, you know, a man eventually, right? Why don't they do that? It's so simple.
I have the exact same question. I have no idea. Why wouldn't you do that? Like, if female supremacy is the obvious question, but in terms of individual cases, I really don't know. If you are a little boy and you are physically a little boy, but you have excess levels of estrogen that it's affecting how your brain works, why wouldn't they treat that with testosterone? Yeah, right. I don't get that. Why mutilate the body to match the hormonal levels in your brain? Why not make your hormone levels match your body? I can't answer that. I don't know. It seems like a terribly cruel thing. We would need, there are some really interesting, very woke transgender people out there. I think that would be a super interesting conversation to have with some of them. Like Blair White, for example, would be a fantastic one.
Interesting. Yeah, this is very interesting. I definitely need to look into the index. I heard the reason why I've heard about that before, actually, because someone looked, I think it was at Michelle Obama, when it came to the hand size and the ratio and things like this, you know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a real problem. And as I said, I mean, it doesn't mean that, you know, they are responsible, but it shows that, you know, many of these feminists, they end up in the same category as men, and they actually begin to compete with men on that same level, right? And it seems almost
which is dumb. You are going to get your ass kicked if you try to compete with men on their level. This is Castor Seminara, right? The Olympian who's got testicles.
Right. Yep.
Looks like a guy, like totally looks like a guy, absolutely fucking killing all the women athletes. Of course he is. Of course he is. If you are going to compete with men on their terms, women are going to lose. And it's all these women with high levels of testosterone who are trying to convince women to do this. Now, the majority of them are saying, no, thanks. No way. I am not doing this.
Yeah, it was even a actually an interesting wrestler. I think it was UFC or something. It was the same thing there. There was a man who had transitioned over to a woman. And it was meeting, you know, contest against another woman. And you know, the woman who actually fought against this transgender person, she said, you know, usually I can get a grip on these on women. I can put out some kind of resistance, right? But in this case, it said I didn't stand a chance. It was like nothing I've ever, you know, competed against before. I don't even know why the Olympic Committee approves these things in the Olympics or in other competitions. I mean, this could go pretty bad pretty quick, right? I mean, all the men could just go over to the women field and where would we be then, right? Ridiculous.
It seems that's where we're heading, right? That was Fox Fallon, and yeah, that's absolutely horrific. I mean, I do some martial arts training myself, and the idea of going up against a man is unimaginable. Like, that you're gonna die, you're gonna lose, there's just no question. 12-year-old boys are stronger than I am, and I am a pretty fit, strong woman. I work at it, and 12-year-old boys I have a hard time putting down. A lot of them I simply can't. That's I think most grown women, they live in a world that allows them to forget that. 12-year-old boys, you try going up against a 15-year-old boy, you are not going to make it. Only the most highly skilled, super strong women are going to make it. But we live in a world that allows women to forget that. Just like we live in a world that allows women to walk over to the wall and flip a switch and get electricity and forget that virtually 100% of the work it takes to put that light in your wall is done by men. It's without men, if men took a day off, society would absolutely collapse. If women took a day off, you'd have to make your own fucking coffee. With the exception of nurses, women basically don't do anything that's vital in society. Nothing. Women could take a whole day off. They could take a week off. It would be annoying. If men took a week off, everything would stop running. There would be no power. There would be no water. There would be no heat. There would be no money. The entire society would collapse. But we live in a world that allows us to forget that. And, you know, back to your earlier question, how do we remind women that that world exists? Well, one way is to simply have men take a fucking day off. Drop a nuclear bomb somewhere. You're going to find out very quickly. If we're going to drop a nuclear bomb somewhere, I recommend Mecca, personally.
Now, you know, you mentioned the vote earlier, and I think one of the things that used to be the case is that you had a household vote, right? That you actually had the family was seen as a family unit, just that. And, you know, and yes, it you know, entailed the fact that the men were doing decisions, you know, but it was for the whole family. It was not to oppress a woman. These were done in consideration to it. The whole patriarchal system has been structured the way it has. Well, A, because of, you know, these natural forces that we're dealing with, but the second is to in veneration of women, right? To take care of them, to protect them, and all these kinds of things. And it's kind of when you think about the whole picture, you really get to a point where you realize that there is an ungrateful lack of appreciation for the sacrifices that men make, and instead we are now seen as the problem. The dangerous thing in this, as I see it, is that you do get movements like MGTOW. You do get a disconnection between men and women, where the resentment gets so high that partially some of the consequences that we're seeing from this is plummeting birth rates in the West, for example. These kinds of things, right? That this is having real consequences, and it's not boding well for us because the schisms between men and women is now so large. Can we heal those in some way? Can we bring men and women back together, or how do you view this?
Well, I sort of had an idea about that. I'll have to go back. I haven't been back to check the comments. Some of my commenters in my blog can be very, very clever, and they really make me think, and I just love that, running that daily blog. But Canada and a number of other countries across Europe have floated the idea that one of the ways to raise the birth rate is to actually pay women to have children, like pay them a sum of money to have children. Our prime minister paid women very small amounts of money as a monthly stipend to have children. But we were thinking like a full, you know, a full cash, reasonable cash payment for having children, up to, say, four children per woman. And how would that work? Well, it turns out that it wouldn't really work very well at all, because women can't be bought quite that easily. So my idea was, instead of paying women to have children, what if we paid men? What if we paid men a certain amount of money to have children? Change the payout, change the dynamic. Right now, women have all the sexual power. If you're a man and you want to have a child, you're going to have to find a willing woman who holds unbelievable power over you. We do not have shared parenting in any jurisdiction in this world. That children belong to women. And if you agree to have a baby with a woman, you put a gun in her hand loaded with bullets, and she can fire it whenever she wants for whatever reason she wants. She can rip you out of your child's life for any fucking reason she likes. And women do. They consistently do that. Between 70 and 80% of divorces are filed by women, and the least likely reason to file for divorce is abuse of any kind. It's more like, I'm bored, we're not in love anymore, I'm not fulfilled, I met someone hotter than I want to fuck. And you have a baby with a woman, you hand her that gun, and you have to trust that she's not going to pull the trigger. Well, that's a shitty condition. No wonder you have MGTOW. I don't think I'd have kids under those conditions either. Am I going to have children with my husband knowing that at any time he can simply take those kids and I'll never see them again, or I'll see them one weekend a month, and I'll spend the rest of my working life paying him to keep the kids away from me? That's the reality for most men. It is grossly unjust. So I'm thinking, what if you paid men? Change the payout. That it's not women. Okay, women have to agree. But the money for having a child, and make it pretty substantial. Make it fairly substantial. You know, $5,000, $10,000. That goes to the dad, no matter what. You change the incentives for women to want to remain with the fathers of their children and to have more children. So I don't know. I think that's going to have to be one of the things that we're willing to talk about. So we have to talk about this fact that women have loaded guns that just devastate men's lives, and they are not afraid to pull them. And it's an embarrassing tragedy for me. It sort of makes me a misogynist. Honestly, I hate women for doing that. I hate them for their willingness to hurt men and destroy their families over nothing, over absolutely nothing. It makes me sick. How do we change it? I don't know. It's a tough one.
Yeah, it is a tough one. What do you think? I don't know. These are some of the questions I'm thinking about. And you know, part of me is like, you have to also reinstate. I mean, despite what women say, you know, I think, as you say, they want it in a certain way, despite what comes out of their mouth, you know. And I think it's also a responsibility on the part of men of just returning to be men. I mean, we have a feminization of our whole culture here. That's happening, and you must have a resurgence of those kinds of elements, and I think that in turn will attract women, and then women want to become more, you know, feminized and you know, be appealing to men. So it works both ways. But I should say the sexual power, as authors like Roger Devlin had shown, I mean, all of that lies in the hands of women, right? They have the bigger responsibility to restore culture to a certain extent, but I think men can push it very, very far to make sure that it kind of returns to some kind of normalcy. But I'm seeing that now. I'm seeing a resurgence of tradition. You know, many on the alt-right obviously, they want to have large families and these kinds of things. So I think we're heading in the right direction, just as a counter-reaction to all the swipple SJW nonsense that we see in the world right now.
Yeah, I think shared parenting would go a long way towards affecting some of that power imbalance too. Okay, ladies, you can destroy your family. You can do it. Go ahead, walk away. You are not taking the children. The absolute, the legal presumption should be that moms and dads are equally valuable. And then when mom and dad break up, that custody is 50-50 down the middle. There's no alimony. There's no child support unless you can make your case for why that should be. You're going to need to prove in a court of law that you are dealing with someone abusive who shouldn't be near his or her children. You need to prove that beyond shadow of doubt. You want to get divorced because you feel like you'd rather fuck your brother's cousin or whatever? go ahead, but you don't walk away with the kids, you don't walk away with the house, and you don't walk away with the fucking dog. I think that would go a long way. And it's interesting that feminism is so rabidly against shared parenting. In every case, in every bill that's been tabled in North America, the National Organization for Women and other feminist organizations have thrown tens of thousands of dollars towards defeating these bills. They literally oppose equality between the genders. I think that's a huge testament to how effective it would be.
Very good. Now, we're going to take a break here shortly. I want to talk to you more with you in the second hour, both about, you know, the alt-right. I want to talk with you about Hillary's speech on the alt-right. I know you watched it. I want to talk about white genocide, you know, a lot of these topics that you're into as well. But tell us a bit more about the website where people can, you know, follow your work. If there's something else you'd like to, I guess, alert our audience to. I don't know. I think you do a show with the Ralph Retort on a weekly basis, right? Tell us a bit about that.
I do. Okay. You can find my blog at judgybitch.com. That started in 2012. I started with a friend who had a little boy who was born very, very critically ill. And we set this blog up so that we could chat back and forth about, you know, just stuff to distract her from what was going on. And she was noticing with her very, very critically ill little son that there was a very huge difference in the care that he got compared to the care that little girls got. And we were both just very interested in where culture was going. So that's how the blog started. It's grown quite massively from there. I have over 800 posts. Some of the best posts can be purchased at Amazon. I put them together in a book called Feminism. You can buy that book at Amazon.com, and I've got a few fiction books up there that I like to write. You can watch some of my videos on YouTube. I am not a huge YouTuber. I have, I don't know, I think maybe 30 or 40 videos up. It's not my favorite thing in the world to do. I do try to keep my content up there. And I do the Kill Stream every Saturday with Ethan Ralph and Nora Malik, who is an incredibly interesting British girl, British girl of Pakistani origin who joins us. She's fantastic. She's smart. She's sweet. She's lovely. She keeps us right on topic. And it's fun for me coming as, you know, sort of a middle-aged housewife with these three kids to join these Nora's 19 and Ralph's 30 and to join them and keep my finger out on what the youngsters are up to, because I find that very interesting.
Very good. We need more folks like you, definitely. So that's very good. Keep up the good work. Judgybitch.com is the website. We'll add links and everything else to that. But yeah, we have much more to discuss here with Janet, a.k.a. Judgy Bitch, in the second segment. So stay with us, everybody. We'll be right back with more. Stay tuned for the second hour, friends. More is coming up. When you want to hear the rest, our members' website is where to go. An entire site for our members, 1,000 shows from New Age, philosophy and conspiracy in the early days to more pro-European and political in the last couple of years. We've covered most that is within the confines of alternative media. Tons of videos for you on the site. You also can watch our live show exclusive for members, Weekend Warrior. We're also redoing the member site, by the way. It'll be much better to navigate and much better functions on it as well. So that's coming up. It's only €6 per month. Please support us and help us grow. We are listener and viewer supported, and we spare you from ads for that reason and from commercial interruptions in the show as well. All right, we'll see you on the other side. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be right back.